We should get prizes for people who know that music, right? Time for George Michael's Sports Machine. Kevin Powell's here, the great sportsman from the Rokan Show, as well as covering the Cubs and Sox here in Chicago on WTN Radio. Good to see you, buddy.
Thanks for having me. I have some breaking news for you, Justin Kaufman.
Let's start with the breaking news.
Luis Robert, the White Sox top prospect who is making his AAA debut tonight, has five RBIs in the first three innings. He hit a grand slam in his very first AAA game, Luis Robert for the White Sox. And after Dylan Cease got the call up last week, with the rebuild, the next clock goes towards when will Luis Robert get called up to the majors. So he's just blowing away competition in single and double A this season, and then in his triple A debut.
Five RBIs.
Grand slam. Pretty good.
So Luis Robert was a Cuban
International
sensation.
Free agent.
Young kid, though, that when he came to the White Sox.
Yeah, international free agent, and not to get too technically baseball nerdy, but really the White Sox, that was the last big international free agent signing in all of baseball, because the new rules now restrict how much you can spend on an international free agent. You remember Shohei Ohtani, who went to the Angels,
Right. Probably
would have fetched around $200 million if he had the opportunity to sign with the highest bidder. But instead, they basically get rookie contracts now. So they've capped it off. The White Sox were the last team to sign a big international free agent before the new rules went into effect. So the Sox spent a lot of money to get him out of Cuba. The guy's a freak athlete. He's a center fielder. Defensively, it appears he checks all the boxes, and offensively, of course, as well. I mean, he's batting like .349 through single and double A this season, 16 homers, now 17 with his grand slam. So he looks to be your center fielder of the future.
It's so great to think of the Cuban connection for the Chicago White Sox. If they can, hopefully, and it was great to see that Jose Abreu was you know, quoted as saying he wants to be a part of this organization, that he'll sign, you know, even if they don't offer a contract. But it does seem like everybody is on board with this rebuild and believes in what could happen in the short term.
Yeah, and I think this year is giving everybody a glimpse into what's coming in the future. I realize they're, 42-44. That's a major improvement from this time last year. I didn't really anticipate him to be this competitive. I really didn't. I thought they would make some serious strides this year, but you know, guys like Jose Abreu, he was another all-star type year. Yoel Moncada, you could have made a case for him to be an all-star. And I think one of the exciting things about this season is that the players that like really matter to the foundation of this team, not making them good for a year or for two, it's like what the Cubs have done, where this is going to be like a whole generation of competitiveness. The Yoel Moncadas, Tim Anderson, I know he's hurt right now, but he was having a great season. Eloy Jimenez, who was hit with a heavy dose of breaking balls, which you normally see for younger hitters, but he's adjusting. He missed a month and he already has 16-17 homers. He clearly belongs. You have guys that like really matter to this long-term rebuild performing well. Lucas Giolito is an all-star a year after having the worst ERA in all of baseball.
Yeah.
An unbelievable turnaround. I guess the only negative or blemish to this season so far, it's just been injuries. I mean, Carlos Rodon, Kopech's still rehabbing. Dane Dunning got hurt down in the minors. Mike Rodolfo. So there's a handful of things there. But overall this year, the individual growth is still what matters. I mean, now all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, maybe they can make a little serious push here. There's still, six, seven games out of the wild card right now. But the individual growth was what was most important this season, and you're seeing a ton of it all across the diamond.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the next. Now that the All-Star break is over, the White Sox go on I think it's a terrible 10-game road trip right out of the break, which is I have a pet peeve on that, only because do the road trip in April when you're playing in Oakland and places like that. I get schedules work this way, but I'd like to see the White Sox at home in July. But regardless of that, that's going to be tough. The next big deadline is going to be the trade deadline at the end of this month.
Mm-hmm.
You have an all-star in James McCann, who was unexpected. You have a closer in Alex Colome, who is a top-10 paid closer and had a great year. Are these the kind of names that we might see shipped if the White Sox are thinking about rebuilds?
I don't think they're going to be a buyer or a seller at the break. And here's why. With Alex Colome, who has 20 saves this season, he's been just absolutely lights out basically the whole year. You have him under control for next year. So let's say you traded Alex Colomé. And the players you do get a ton of value for at the trade deadline are closers and late-inning guys because teams that are competitive want to bolster their bullpen.
Right.
I mean, you see it time and time again. The Cubs going for Aroldis Chapman and spending all that to get him. It worked out, but you have to pay the price to get those power arms at the back end of a bullpen for a deep run in the postseason. Now, Colomé makes sense for just about every single team that's in the playoff hunt, right? But they have him under control for next year. So if you trade an Alex Colomé, and then next year they are where we think they're going to be, which is a team that's pushing for the playoffs, this time next year, then we're saying, where do we find an Alex Colomé all of a sudden?
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
So since he is under control next year, unless some team comes in and offers the world for Alex Colomé, which I don't anticipate happening, but a team gets desperate. Maybe they get desperate. Then you take some offers, you take some phone calls. James McCann, the value you are going to get for him is not going to be equal to the value he's bringing to the White Sox now. And again, same thing with Colomé. They have control of McCann for next season as well. It's not like he could walk as a free agent next year. And James McCann has been so important to, like, Lucas Giolito. He has flat out come out and said, much of his turnaround, much of his success this season has been because of James McCann. He wouldn't have been doing what he's done this year if not for James McCann. And really, when they signed McCann, they just wanted a veteran guy who knew how to catch a game well, defensively, all those sorts of things, be a leader. I mean, this is a guy who caught for Verlander, for Scherzer in Detroit, for David Price in Detroit. So he knows, you know, we talked to him all the way back in spring training, and we asked him, well, how do you mentor some of these younger pitchers? He goes, well, he had a very interesting perspective on it because he says he was a young catcher learning from great pitchers, not vice versa, you know, because he was learning from the Verlanders.
Yeah, right.
He was learning from the Scherzers. So, I don't see a huge market for McCann, for a veteran catcher, and who knows? Offensively, I don't know if he's going to keep up this pace, but what a season he's having, and he's been so important to this team all throughout the year.
There's so many other things we could talk about, of course, but the last thing we'll say before we go to the break is a guy like Luis Robert, do we expect to see him up this season?
Look, again, he had a grand slam today. He's got five RBIs through three innings. We had Rick on White Sox Weekly on Saturday. I mean, we kind of pushed him a little bit. Like, you're not completely closing the door on him coming up this year. And he's like, well, it's just sort of like, look, if he's batting 350 through the first few weeks of the season and he's smacking homers left and right, you kind of have to bring him up at that point, you know? So I wouldn't completely close the door on it. I would say it's probably... if I had to put a percentage on it, I would say it's 70% he stays in AAA, 30% maybe he pushes the cause and gets the call at the AAA. But what a start for him, man. He's going to be so fun to watch when he gets to the bigs.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. We'll get the news, and then we'll come back, talk a little bit about the Cubs on the north side and some other sports news around town. Kevin Powell, of course, the man who covers baseball for WGN Radio, and, of course, is on with Roe and Anna in the afternoons, is my guest here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Session 720 here on 720 WGN. I like this one. This is right out of the 77 All-Star game. Little Mel Allen. I love it. Love it. Kevin Powell's here. He covers baseball for WGN Radio as well as other things. And, of course, you can catch him every day, 3 to 7, with Roe and Anna. All right, so before we get to the Cubs, and I want to get to the Cubs because they're in a pennant race. But the some basketball news, which is great. There was some thought that maybe the Chicago Bulls could be in on a Russell Westbrook sweepstakes as the Oklahoma City Thunder look to trade him. But news breaking tonight that that's not the case.
Not the case. Russell Westbrook headed to the Rockets. For Chris Paul and a couple of first-round picks. So Russell Westbrook and James Harden reunited.
How about that? That's fun. That's fun. And again, it's also very...
You're a big NBA guy, right?
I am. I'm frustrated because I'm a big NBA guy, and I like the Chicago Bulls. And you know, we talk about the White Sox and the rebuild, but there has been seemingly a plan, meaning you're starting to see these guys come up.
They're calling it a plan.
Yeah. The Chicago Bulls, I'm a little bit head-scratchy because, last year was not a good year. You did not feel... They
had injuries, so even the core guys didn't even really have a chance to play together. The Bulls, what's gone down over the past 3, 4, 5 years has totally deflated my love for the NBA just because if the Bulls aren't good, obviously you're going to have less interest in it. And it's just so frustrating, too, because when you see teams playing well, you're like, I mean, look at the Raptors, right? They're basically just in the middle of the pack. Toronto Raptors, they had some good years, but they're probably not going to win anything. What do? They found a way to get a superstar, and they won their first NBA title. What do the Clippers do, who have been the Clippers forever? They find a way to get Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. It's that quickly in the NBA you can turn from just a middle-of-the-road team to an actual title contender. And like the fact that the Bulls didn't even try to get Kawhi Leonard? They didn't even attempt to get Kawhi Leonard?
Or in the case of even look into Russell Westbrook.
Or Paul George. Like, that's so deflating as a fan to know that management didn't even take the time to pursue a top 2-3 player in all of the NBA.
I think about the Chicago Bears, and I thought that the Bears bringing in Khalil Mack is a good parallel. Last year, we were very excited about what we'll see with a new coach and if this offense would work. And Mitch Trubisky, they might be .500. But getting Khalil Mack changed
everything.
I mean, you want to see that from, especially in an NBA league, it's all about the players. They have built the ability to flex. They run the league. So the idea that the Bulls are doing a different strategy than the other 30 teams in the league, it is very deflating. That's a great word for Bulls fans.
Yeah, I mean, it's the name of the game in the NBA now is find superstars and convince them to come to your team and let the superstars play together for better or for worse. I mean, you can make a case against it too, but that is just the case in the NBA right now. The Khalil Mack reference is also, you know, that's an interesting perspective to take on it too. I mean, I think for some teams, you have to look at a situation and say, okay, we're going to give up a whole lot, but like, you're getting a franchise-altering type player in a Khalil Mack. I mean, especially with the way the game's played now, you need edge rushers. You got a guy who is Hall of Fame type talent. So the aggressiveness of Ryan Pace, and not even just with Khalil Mack. I know we can talk about how much he gave up just to move up for Mitch Trubisky. But I think the one thing that I respect out of Ryan Pace is that when he wants something, he gets it. He finds a way to get it, no matter how aggressive he needs to be. And so far, it's working, right? So far, it's working.
And also, I think recognizing a fan base in a city that...
The frustration
of now you're in year three of all these rookies and top draft picks, and all that's great, and we get to see them mature. But at the end of the day, you want to see a winning product on the field or the court.
The Urlacher days were so fun. The Bears, you won't meet a bigger diehard fan than me. My whole life, it's just been Bears were number one for me. And it's like... It just feels so different right now, you know, where it felt like even that year they went to the Super Bowl, it felt even a little fluky because of how well the defense played and some of those turnovers, and the offense was just so bad for
Rex
most
Grossman,
of the year. So like this feels, if Mitch can make some big strides this year, that changes everything. Then all of a sudden the Bears look like a monster for the next few years here, because if you have a franchise-type quarterback, you're always going to be solid or at least in the playoff conversation. And then you couple that with all the talent he has around him on both sides of the ball. So I've never been this excited for a Bears season. I know you didn't bring me here for Bears.
No, but I'll talk Bears.
I haven't been this excited for a Bears season probably in my lifetime.
The pundits, and I think it's funny, it's John Fox included.
Yeah, get out of here.
Get out
John
of here.
Fox.
But there has been a chorus that the Bears did not have a great offseason, mostly surrounding how they've handled the kicker situation. They actually are entering camp in 2 weeks. Well, that situation has not been shored up. What do you think about that? Is that something you see Robbie Gould again here talking a little bit about? He doesn't know what his future is in San Francisco. Yeah. Do you think Ryan Pace gets aggressive in camp and brings a veteran kicker to Chicago?
I wouldn't be stunned if they do get another kicker. It's a situation that needs to be fixed immediately. But to go back to the fact that the Bears had a bad offseason is just absurd. They didn't have a first-round pick. Why? Because they have that guy Khalil Mack all of a sudden.
Yeah, right.
So draft night was a win for the Bears because they have Khalil Mack. When that first pick rolled through, pick number 26, which is the one they gave to the Raiders, I was like, this is awesome. That's basically why Khalil Mack is in Chicago, because of that draft pick right there. So to say they had a bad offseason, that's just absurd. I mean, look, I know you and I talked about this, and actually we disagreed on the way Matt Nagy's handling the kicker situation. He's so kind of meeting it face-to-face and not running. I like the fact that Matt Nagy is not running from the fact that the kicker problem is a problem, and he's not giving BS to the media and trying to spin zone it however he wants. And look, I think using it as a motivating factor, it should use that as a motivating factor. If you're a coach, you're always trying to find a different angle to motivate your players. What more is going to motivate these guys than watching that freaking football hit the post twice last fall at Soldier Field.
I was listening to sports radio not too long ago, and they had a great premise of what if the ball went through the goalpost? What if the double doink went through and they didn't miss? And how that would have changed the outcome of the 2019 season, meaning you would have had.
I mean, they could have went. They
would have gone to LA. There wouldn't have been the pass interference with the Rams and the Saints. That wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, you can do the whole butterfly effect.
Yeah,
thing
butterfly effect of going all the way to the Super Bowl.
I mean, if that goes in, the Bears have a really, really good shot at going to the Super Bowl. I mean, it wouldn't have been that surprising if they beat the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, you saw the way the Patriots shut them down. They figured out Sean McVay's offense.
The way they said it on the show was they would have beat the Rams just like they did. The Cowboys would have beat the Saints because they beat them earlier in the season. And then the Cowboys would have come to Soldier Field and the Bears would have beat them.
I'm bummed I missed that sports radio conversation.
It's a good one, right?
Yeah, it's a good one. You know what actually I think is interesting? Okay, let's say Parkey's kick does go in, right? And then let's say they go on to win the Super Bowl. And Parkey never really has a high leverage situation throughout the rest of the playoffs. Maybe makes one or two chip shots and the rest of the extra points. Is Cody Parkey still with the Bears?
Oh, absolutely, right?
I don't know if he is, though.
Yeah, maybe they could quietly move on from him.
That's a more interesting conversation, I think, is if there was no more high leverage moments with Cody Parkey the rest of the playoffs, and that kick did go in, and he made a couple 20, like 30 yards, just chip shots here and there that didn't really matter that much, and then the Bears still have some questions. I mean, they probably do bring him back because of the contract and how much they eat for that.
Yeah,
but also it wouldn't have been that surprising if they still moved on.
There'd be no Today Show.
They're being on Today Show. Right? Yeah, that was the real moment that did it.
All Bears fans
disgusted when you saw that. I mean, what are you doing? And everyone's like, well, he's not the only one who lost the game. It's like, well, yeah, you didn't see the rest of his teammates on the Today Show, did you? No, they all handled it like pros. They backed up Cody Parkey. I was in the locker room interviewing the guys after that game, and they all were professionals and not a single peep, not even a pinch, a hint of negativity towards Cody Parkey. And he goes and makes it about himself. I don't know why I'm going on a Bears rant, because I'm having flashbacks to like the week after when Ro and I were having like spasm attacks in the studio talking about Cody Parkey.
I love it.
And the double dog. So I was finally getting over it with some positive White Sox stuff. Cubs are in first place. We're going baseball. Right. I don't know how we won this Bears rant, but there it is. There's your random Bears rant this Thursday night.
I love Bears rants. All right, let's do this. Let's take this break.
Training camp coming in a week and a half.
Yeah. We'll take this break, do Cubs, and wrap it up. Kevin Powell's here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Kevin Powell in studio, Extension 720 tonight, talking sports as we get this opportunity to do so tonight. As we are at the All-Star break, one more day here until the Cubs and Sox are back. Let's talk Cubs.
Okay.
The Chicago Cubs are, I think, you know, we are a White Sox station, so a lot of times the Cubs get overlooked. And the Cubs are probably the most underachieving first-place team in baseball. They're in first place, a half game up on a very difficult division. But the Cubs, I think if you asked anybody, it feels like this has not been their year, even though they're four games up.
It's, you know, even Chris Bryan admitted to it talking at the All-Star break. Like, yeah, they're in first place, but they completely underperformed in the first half. And they're the first ones to tell you that. You know, I think some of the telling signs for the Cubs this year, at least for me, is defensively how bad they've played. 2016 was the best year defensively. I'm like right up there with the 05. They were number one. If you look at all the, if you want to go nerdy baseball stats, they're number one defensively. If you want to just look at like straight errors, they were the best defense. I mean, they were perfect in 2016. Last year, they were pretty good. 18, it's kind of been a regression, like, you know, from year to year. And now they're just kind of in the middle of the pack in baseball defensively. And I don't really know what to make of it, if it's a lack of focus or what it may be. But they're underachieving, and somehow they're still in first place in this very difficult NL Central, which is separated by a total of like 4.5 games. The last place team is just 4.5 games back of the Cubs. Look, I think if they play well, like we think they can in the second half, I think they can win this division, no question. I think for them, it's a slippery slope. Like, if they continue this trend, at some point, the Brewers are going to get hot. At some point, the Cardinals, even the Pirates are lingering, who they have a three-game series with, which all of a sudden feels pretty big right out of the gate for the second half. I mean, if the Cubs play at this pace right now and the Brewers or Cardinals get hot, in like 2 weeks, they could be like three, four, five games back in the Central race. Yeah. So it's like a very fine line for the Cubs right now. And I think if they don't see them play better, and if they miss the postseason, you're going to see a ton of changes this offseason, including manager, Joe Maddon going.
Theo Epstein had his press conference right before the break, and he kind of talked a lot like what you're talking about, like the sloppy defense, and he stopped short of essentially saying, you know, this is what we expect from the manager. I mean, it really felt like they really got their eyes set on Joe Maddon. The feeling is that, yeah, if the Cubs don't do well, if they find themselves out, we may see a coaching change, yeah. which is hard to believe for a guy who won a World Series.
I know.
In Chicago.
And I've had this conversation, I think, with you and multiple people. It's so crazy to think that, like, the guy who led the Cubs to the World Series. The standard has changed with the Cubs. It's almost like you forget about the fact that they didn't win for 108 years now, because, and I think that's actually, you know, like a good thing for the Cubs, where they have changed the culture, where this is a winning team now. They're not the lovable losers anymore. The standard now is go deep into the postseason, mm-hmm. if not win the World Series every year. So it's like quick to forget, easy to forget where they were just 5, 6, 7 years ago without winning World Series. So the guy who leads them to ending the 108-year drought could potentially be out of Chicago 3 seasons later is just wild. You would have figured if we had this conversation 10, 15 years ago and said, man, the manager who leads them to the World Series is probably going to have a statue built of him 30 minutes after the World Series. And it's just different, though. I think everything changes once you win that World Series and the standard changes. Yeah. I think that the manager in baseball, if a team wins, Most of the credit should go to the players. If a team loses, I think most of the credit should go to the players as well. I think the manager doesn't matter a whole lot, in my opinion. Now, I think Joe Maddon was extremely important to the rebuilding of the franchise and the culture change that happened with the Cubs. But if the players are underperforming, I'm really interested to see if Theo is willing to part with some of these guys that helped them win the World Series, and guys who you keep kind of like, are they going to turn the corner? Are they going to turn it into stars like the Albert Almoras, the Kyle Schwarbers? Like, will he part with guys like that? Guys that are actually on the big league club? That's the question I have.
Wasn't the old adage in baseball that a manager is plus minus 10? And there's 10 games that a manager is going to have their fingers in that are going to either win or lose. And with Joe Maddon's case, those 10 games will make or break the Chicago Cubs. That's the issue where you're like, if they are having issues where he doesn't bring in Brandon Kinsler, or he holds the starter, or he takes Kyle Hendricks out in the fourth inning, whatever it might be, and he finds himself losing those games, that's, I think, where Theo Epstein looks at the data and says, that plus 10 is giving us a minus 10.
Yeah, you know, the manager, when we have basically every sort of stat and metric in baseball imaginable, anything you want quantified in baseball can be quantified. The one thing they haven't really been able to quantify is the value of a manager.
Right,
they
right.
haven't. Like, we have wars for players, a war, positive war, wins above replacement, those sorts of things. That's kind of a good indication of where a player is at in a particular season throughout the length of a career. It's almost impossible to quantify how much a manager means to a ball club. I don't even know if it's plus 10, minus 10. Maybe it matters 5 games one way or the other. I think they are more about kind of managing the clubhouse, keeping guys happy and keeping enthusiasm high and those sorts of things. Rather than
PJ night.
Right.
Pajama night.
Exactly. Right. You know, rather than like in football where the X's and O's matter so much.
Game plan and strategy. Yeah. All right, so let's talk the same question for the White Sox. The Cubs, the deadline coming up, they have to be buyers. I mean, they're in the game. They've obviously already doubled down with Craig Kimbrel coming to Chicago. There's a question about what they have to offer other teams. You know, you have a depleted farm system because they've made these trades over time because they've been contenders. But you think about guys like Schwarber, Addison Russell, even Ian Happ in the minors, or maybe some of the rookies, the Adbert, the pitcher.
Edbert Elzelay.
Yeah. Are those chips that could bring a second baseman like Whit Merrifield or other players to bolster this lineup?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, before the season and even last year, around the trade deadline, Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer continue to say that everything we have is already on the big league club. It's just a matter of performing as high as you can. And I kind of get the feeling that, you know, they may just sort of say, look, we've built this thing,
And you can't.
You guys go do it, and if you don't do it, then we'll make changes in the offseason.
You can't begrudge them that, because if you look at the starting five for the Chicago Cubs, the money that is allocated for those five guys, Lester, Hamels, Darvish, Quintana, Hendricks got an extension at the beginning of the year. Usually you're going to find, like you said, people bringing in back-end arms at the deadline. They did that. They brought in Kimbrel. Right. They've done the work. Right. These guys should be performing. I thought it was very telling, Kevin, that there was not a Cubs pitcher in the All-Star game. That's not a good sign for a team that puts that much money into that rotation.
Great point. Return on investment there. And look, you know, Cub fans have been calling for Craig Kimbrel all season. And what do they do? The Cubs went and got Craig Kimbrel. I don't really know what else Theo and Jed can do at this point, because you talked about the prospects aren't really there. You'd have to get real creative with bringing. I mean, what would they honestly add at this point? I mean, if you really want to kind of mix things up and trade guys off the big league club, I just kind of don't see that happening. I think if those sorts of changes are going to come, I think they're going to come in the offseason.
Yeah. Our last question on the Cubs, just as, you know, this weekend, you said it, this feeling, you know, it's got a competitive feeling with playing the Pirates at Wrigley. It starts tomorrow in the afternoon. These two teams just played last week, and it got nasty. I mean, you saw Joe Maddon yelling expletives at the other coach, at Clint Hurdle, because the Pirates like to throw inside. They like to. They've been hitting Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo pretty regularly. What do you think is going to happen here? Are we going to? Is there potential for some animosity and fireworks this weekend?
I wouldn't be that surprised. Temperatures in the mid-90s, humid day at Wrigley, Central Division matchup, teams that have kind of had a history over the past few years. Now, I wouldn't be that surprised. Would not be that surprised.
Yeah, I just feel...
I think it's fun, to be honest with you.
It is, but I mean, Joe Maddon's got a little bit of a point, because it seems like the Pirates in the last couple series have been just pegging
that also
Cubs.
Sort of felt like a timely motivator for Maddon. It kind of did, didn't it? Yeah. Like, that's kind of exactly what they needed at that point. And he probably was a little frustrated for a lot of things and just said, screw it, I'm going to take it out on the Pirates here. So I wouldn't be surprised. It should be an interesting series this weekend.
Would be great to start the second half that way, right?
Let's go.
A brawl at Wrigley.
Yeah. One first half. Hopefully the second half matches it.
There you go. Thanks. Kevin Powell covers the Cubs and the Sox for WGN, and he also can be heard every single weekday with Rokan and Anna DeVellantes. Kev, great to have you, and have a great night, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.